All yours, welcome.
Thanks.
Brilliant. So I am Amy.
And I'm Ruth.
Hello. We're going to talk about learning together. Yeah, the room feels quite quiet. It's an oddly large room, and you're all sort of disparate.
And there's no lectern to hide behind, which is quite disconcerting.
Anyway, onwards. Learning together. So, we're here to talk about Learning Together, which is an educational initiative that's about curating communities of learning that span Kazoon University walls. It's about partnership, working. And we wanted to start with the words of one of our students, because our students always say it better than we can. This particular student is called Adam, and he wrote, this is an extract from something that he wrote in a prison newsletter.
So I'm going to be Adam. This is what he wrote. He was describing Learning Together, his experience of it. Around 20 students gather weekly, this year on B-Wing, for an interactive lecture, before breaking into subgroups to discuss and debate the lecture and related reading material. But here's the twist. Only half the students are resident in the prison. The rest are criminology students from Cambridge. They aren't studying us, they're studying with us. And this through-the-gate inclusivity distinguishes Learning Together from other educational initiatives. The learning philosophy underpinning the course requires this kind of collaboration. Both the course-specific learning and the potential for personal development are maximised by the element of human connection. We share ideas, forge friendships, challenge each other, all on an equal basis. Yes, we are learning about criminology, but we're also learning to think, to question, to listen, to challenge perceptions, and to believe in ourselves.
So what we thought we'd do is talk about our journey into space. I should say, journey into space.
We should. Let me do a sound effect. A clit.
Okay. So we're going to tell our story about our journey into space. Neither of us are geographers. I'm a lawyer.
Space people.
I'm a lawyer slash criminologist, and Ruth is a recovering lawyer and very much a criminologist. So our journey into space, the design of Learning Together was rooted around those three different sort of theoretical threads and some beautiful, what we think are beautiful coincidences between them. So the theories are sort of how people learn well, how people move away from offending towards non-offending lives, and then how we bring people together in ways that reduce stigma and prejudice. And for us, the beautiful intersections between that theory point to the power of the interpersonal. They point to the theoretical significance of understanding interactions between agency and relational, institutional and social context. And we think it points to the importance of community and the really difficult question of how we build the sorts of life-giving, learning and other communities that grow and nurture everybody.
So this journey has continued and kind of drawn us into geography, particularly the work of sociologist Richard Sennett. And he looks at life in cities and the boundaries, borders and edges of that life. And there are three things particularly that we draw out of his work that we think are life-giving. I'm going to get onto plant cell biology in a second. The slide isn't entirely out of place. So Sennett says a couple of things. First of all, he says that edges actually are really life-giving. They're important sites for transformative action. So he describes how community edges within cities are vehicles for social expression, and actually that the edges of our institutions and our buildings create their own rituals, and they influence the human bonds that we can create. And he draws on natural sciences, hence the plant cells there, to explain how he says if we actually want to build healthy communities, we need to realise that these life-giving interactions happen at the edges and think about how we design our buildings and our communities where we interact appropriately and accordingly. And flowing from that, he says that if we're building these kind of life-giving rather than life-deadening communities, what we need to do when we're thinking about how we do that is to balance, get the right balance between rigidity and porosity. So if you think about this plant cell analogy here, he's saying we need to think about how do we let the valuable nutrients that are, how do we keep the valuable nutrients that are in our communities there? How do we make sure that our border is kind of solid enough to keep the good things there? But also, what valuable nutrients do we need to let in from other communities to kind of keep us alive, to stop our communities being shrinking cells that wither and die because they can't get the nutrients they need in? And so that's obviously very relevant to prisons. He's not talking about prisons, but you can think of it in that context. And finally, he says we should anticipate that that kind of edge work, interactions on the edges, will be and should be, he says, uncomfortable. A kind of productive discomfort, we're calling it. Life-giving edges might be places that invite. In fact, Sennett would say should oblige uncomfortable intergroup interaction and learning. And so the kind of thing he's saying that we should be building towards is what Bauman calls ethical rather than aesthetic communities. Kind of accepting the uncomfortable truths that are part of being kind of intimately and actually inherently bound together with people that are different from us.
So that's how theory has transported us into space. So too soon would our data. So when we first created Learning Together, we designed what we and the British Academy thought was a pretty robust social science evaluation. So it had everything that you might want in a good evaluation, so a quantitative pilot phase, so we could design ground up evaluation methods, the promise of a fairly decent sample size, we had a pre-post design, we had a longitudinal element, and we even had a propensity score matched control group. Sounds great. When we used those methods, though, in year one to evaluate the first year of Learning Together, they yielded some useful and interesting data, data that really emphasised the importance of what's personal and the importance of context, but it didn't really capture it, it didn't really get deep enough to get at what we thought was there. So we learned some good stuff about how this learning experience was altering people's self-perceptions, perceptions of other people, perceptions of them or relationships with others, ideas about who they could become, the spaces they could move into. And we describe that in terms of changes in terms of being, belonging and becoming. But it didn't really get deeper than that. And our students felt as frustrated as we did, and they wrote a 5-page critique of our methods, and you can see that's the first paragraph of their 5-page critique. Well, good, you've equipped them well. They felt that their experiences of the learning space weren't being captured by our current methodology, because our current methodology had as the principal site of it individuals, and that we were thinking about change in terms of kind of pre-post in quite a linear way.
And so you can see here that this is some of the findings from interviews in year two of the course. And you can see here that they've kind of captured the interviews, they've talked about these three elements that they thought we weren't capturing. So interactions, time and space. So as for here, she's describing how individual growth for her, in that first quote, has happened in interaction with others. And that's actually, if we're trying to only capture sort of pre and post changes, then we're missing some of that interaction that's happening as it goes on during the course. And it also felt unsatisfactory, if you look at the second quote from Adam, to be measuring states of being at these two time points, when actually what our students were saying to us was that not only did their state of mind alter across the course, but also those alterations had implications for how they viewed their past and also what their horizons were into their futures. And finally, it felt really unsatisfactory to have our students as the sole site of measurement. So this kind of personal, what are you like before and what are you like after? Because we thought we're missing the context here, we're missing the social and maybe even the geographical context of meaningful encounters.
So all of that got us thinking and reading some bizarre things, including quantum physics, because, like other people, we felt dissatisfied about how we were measuring things, and probably more importantly, what our ways of measuring were saying and perpetuating about how we understand social life. So quantum physics started us thinking about whether we could understand individual change better in time and space. So what we were on the search for, and to some extent still are, is a method that enables deep and rigorous sociological observation that retains interactional, temporal and spatial complexity, but which enables us to see that complexity as patterns and numbers that help us to also see the macro. So we're looking for something that describes individual, institutional and social entanglement and complex processes of emergence that are situated interactionally in time and space.
Feels a bit like an advert there. So what we're looking for,
if anyone's got it,
then we'll be solutions.
Yes, thank you very much. Pay a fine price. What we've come across is the work of Cynthia Kurtz on participatory narrative inquiry. So she's developed a method that kind of combines very qualitative, grounded narrative work, kind of the stories that we live by with all their glorious complexity, with ways of understanding how it is that those stories interact in patterns and how that can help us understand the complexity of social processes. And using the method, we started to use it this year, we're really running it properly. We started to use it last year at the end of our course, we're running it properly this year. It's broadened what it is that we're asking about, who it is that we're asking it to, and also when we're asking questions about the course. So as I say, we've only just piloted it, but we'll be seeing what happens this year.
This is a very embryonic snapshot of a very small portion of data analysis from this year to give you a sense of why we're excited about this method. What you see here is one of the themes that our students identified as an important analytical question about their stories. So the question is this story about me, us, or others? And the story has been plotted against that. So each one of the dots in the triangle represents a story that's been told. And what's interesting to us is by retaining the story as the underlying dot, we still have the underlying complexity, so we can disaggregate this data by time. And if we do that, what we notice is that the story's shifted from the start of the course being quite a lot about me, towards later others, towards us, and by the end of the course moved towards me and us. So this is only 30 stories here because this was kind of in the pilot stage. But what we are going to be doing this year and what we expect is to see lots more dots because we're collecting lots more stories. 30 stories per week over a 12-week course, over three courses, over two sites. So we're bringing into play lots more people in lots more locations over lots of a more sophisticated time period.
And so just very quickly to give you an idea of kind of what the software can do, as we're seeing the patterns emerging, one of the things we can do is obviously see what those patterns are telling us, but we can go right back to the complexity, right back to the individual story that particular dot tells us about. So we get the more complex understanding of the process that we're observing, but also it depends less upon us deciding which are the stories that explain the patterns in the data, because the stories don't disappear, they stay there. So that complex detail of what we're calling kind of social entanglement remains visible even as those more quantitative patterns emerge from the data. And we can then ask questions of that data that will help us understand those interactions and also how those interactions relate to experiences in time and space. So for example, we can ask who was talking, we can ask what is it they were talking about, who they were talking to, how they felt, at what point in the course those interactions took place, whether it made them think of the past or the future, who they might like to tell those stories to, so thinking more about sort of broader social context as well. And we can also ask these stories, we're going to ask not just the people on the course to fill them out, but staff on the wings, people's family and friends who come into the end of course celebrations, so we can get a more complex social picture as well. And in the future, if we can manage to get funding to do a longitudinal study, we would have that complex picture of what went on to think about how that interacts with outcomes.
And we have a whole 30 seconds. So skip through that one. I know it's a nice quote. Skip through that one.
Lovely quote.
To the end one.
Okay.
It'd be brutal.
Brutal all the way. 30 seconds to keep us on time. This takes us to the
Jill
lovely
Valentine.
Jill Valentine. We think, we have come to start thinking, that transformative social science, it's kind of what we're trying to do is to understand and to articulate the entangled and the emergent nature of social life. And our journey into space that we've been doing together, it's challenging us to try and think methodologically, multidimensionally as well. So just as Jill Valentine argues that flat encounters in life in general can entrench and can reproduce existing prejudices, status quos, and misunderstandings, we think that also flat science can feel unfulfilling and can risk compounding our partial vision, and also can compound the misunderstandings that flow from that partial vision.
And I think that for us is what's really quite exciting about today, because it's the coming together of new edges, new disciplinary edges, new ideas. And it's about, I think, us thinking together about what already and what could flow between our different communities, intellectual communities, in ways that are life-giving. It's an invitation, we think, to ask new and productively uncomfortable questions, as educationalist Paulo Freire would put it, to submit ourselves as researchers also to questioning, to admit in a quantum way that we are unfinished and the possibilities are endless. So we wanted to finish with a quote from Paulo Freire, which is Ruth's Latino crush.
Latino academic crush.
Yeah. And he says this: unfinishedness is essential to our human condition. It isn't about arriving, it's about how you travel and what you learn on the way, because knowledge only emerges through invention and reinvention. Through the restless, impatient, continuing, hopeful inquiry human beings pursue in the world, with the world, and with each other.
Thank you. Thanks very much for opening me. I bet you didn't think you were going to get quantum physics at this time in the morning. We've got time, I think, just maybe one question now and then hold the rest to the end. Yeah, Rachel.
I'm always a little bit cynical when it's sort of about the cult criminology students going in. Do you think it would work if it was a different subject that they were learning together? Or do you think that would it change too much to argue? What do you think that would happen?
Yes, we're doing it. So we are supporting the running of three courses this year from Cambridge, which are in philosophy and theology, literary criticism, and criminology. So kind of watch this space. This is going to give us some data around that. But I think it is possible if you do it in a theoretically informed way, because actually, I think if you teach well, you teach in ways that people can access ideas through their own experiences. And for us, what's really important about these coming together is that we're not interested in coming into a prison necessarily, because we expect people in prison to share only their experiences that are distinct to the prison environment.
Yeah, so I think partly it's about the theory, some of the theory around intergroup contact, and when it reduces prejudices, talks about power imbalance and how you have to have something that connects people. So for us, we're connecting as learners, and we've designed the classroom quite specifically around how you do that. So sometimes criminology, I think, can be more difficult rather than less, because I think we have to be really careful about how we ask our questions so that everybody can experientially access those questions on a parity level. So we would never ask, what is life like in prison? We might ask, can you tell me about a time when you felt power exercised on you legitimately or illegitimately? Everybody can talk about that. Some of those experiences might be from a prison context, some not. But for me, this could be art. We have a funding proposal in for drawing connections. It's going to be English literature. It's going to be in philosophy and theology. I'd like every department at every university to be doing something like this.
Okay. Lovely. Thank you.